Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Tim Acca. And Tim Acca has written a book called Endgame Economics. Now, his background is as a financial analyst for a large Canadian bank. Tim, welcome to LifeQuest.
Thanks, Dwight. Great to be here.
Why did you write this book at this time?
Okay, well, this book, it was really a second book that I've written. It was written to help people understand what's going on in the markets today and in the economy, and help them understand how that really relates to the Bible and biblical prophecy, because I think there's a lot of confusion going on out there in the world right now.
But that leads me to the next question. You do think that there is some connection between what is written in the scripture and economics in the 21st century?
Absolutely, absolutely. Very, very clear. And, you know, when I first started researching this book, I came across a text, and it really got me to thinking. And then as I did more research, I found that, you know, the Bible was full of references and precedents and prophecies that helped us understand what the financial conditions of the world are today. And just before, you know, we believe that Jesus is coming back soon. And he wanted us to know what was going to happen. And he gave us enough information so that we would be aware.
Now, there's a lot of things happening in the world today that somehow affect economics, not just world economics, but trickle down to our own personal economics. But there's crisis in the world. There's environmental crisis. There's social and military issues that we hear about every day. How does that all come together and have an impact?
Okay, well, you know, all these geopolitical events obviously have an impact on all the economies of the world, and obviously it's very tricky. You know, there's no one thesis that helps describe everything, right? But one thing that I've to really simplify things, right? I always believe in trying to boil things down to a
sure,
very simple issue, and the way I look at what's going on in the world, it's leading to what I call God's end game, which is he's trying to bring about an end to this world, but he's got some things he needs to do before that happens, and one of those things is that his church, the Christian church, really needs to rise up and do the thing that God had commissioned them to do, which is spread the gospel and the love of Jesus to the whole world. Once that happens, then God could bring about the rest of this end game, right? So that, I think that's the critical thing. Well, how does God make that happen? How does God, you know, revitalize his church to make this this church triumphant, you know, ride in and do the thing that he was supposed to do? Because the way we look at it, the way I look at it now, we are what the Bible would call Laodicea. You know, we're kind of lukewarm. We go to church every week, but, you know, we're just kind of there, right? And we're not really doing the thing that God had asked us to do.
There are a lot of levels of financial concern. There are national debts, as Americans, we're concerned about that, in fact, most Western countries are deeply concerned, and third world countries who are borrowing money just to survive. There are local cities and counties, provinces, states have problems, and then there's personal debt. Is this all linked?
I believe so. We're living on borrowed money. Since, you know, you can point back to a number of different places in history, but perhaps one of the most things that we can point to is when we really went off the gold standard, or when the United States went off the gold standard back in the early 70s, and it really became necessary to borrow money, and increasingly for the government, for regional governments, for corporations, you know, debt had to become a part of that whole economic thought, because it was debt which allowed us to continue to grow. You know, this whole Keynesian economic thought theory, where your economy has to continue to grow in order to survive, and the way to continue to grow that economy is by putting more debt onto the books. And that's at every level, right? So personal, corporate, municipal, state, and federal.
Tim, but you know that you've talked about the Christian Church and our mission to share the gospel and the concept of the soon coming of Jesus. And yet churches themselves, Christian organizations and communities are finding themselves in some kind of financial situation also, aren't they?
And speaking of debt, so this is the text that really brought my attention. Back in 2008, we were right in the middle of the crisis. I had been reading through the Bible, and I came across this text in the book of Habakkuk. And I know that's not a typical place that we like to read, but this one really hit me. And if I could share that text with you. He said, Habakkuk was writing about the end times. He said, this vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Mm-hmm. This is what he said. He said, woe to him who increases that which is not his. How long? And to him who loads himself with many pledges. Now, pledges being another word for debt.
Right.
And Habakkuk was warning about the accumulation of material goods, right? We increase that which is not his. And I read that and I thought, wow, that's a great description of our society today. We own a lot of stuff, but it's not ours because we borrowed money to buy it, right? It's owned by the banks and it's owned by the credit card companies and so on. So, who increases that which is not his, I thought, wow, that's a great way of putting it. And we've done that, and he says, we've loaded ourselves with many pledges, right? And then the next sentence he says, in the next verse he says, will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken who oppress you, and you will become their booty? And I thought, wow, that's exactly what's going on in the world right now, is the creditors are waking up to the fact that all the people who've been borrowing money from them are just not creditworthy. But as I looked at this verse and I started looking at the context of it, I thought, this is really appropriate for me personally and individuals. But as I looked at it, I saw a bigger picture, because he describes this nation. And listen to this. He describes this nation. He says he transgresses by wine. He's a proud man. He doesn't stay at home. He enlarges his desires hell. He's like death. He can't be satisfied. He gathers himself all nations and heaps up to himself all peoples. And it's describing this nation that has this insatiable appetite and goes out and tries to gather up all the world, become a dominating world power here. And as I studied this further, I realized, I believe that this is really pointing to the United States of America in the end times. And I don't have time to get all into it, but I do try and explain to folks in my book how I believe that this is really pointing to the United States and the debt crisis that the United States is facing today.
What is the message, then, that Christians need to give, not just to those who may never have thought of this, but to themselves?
So there, throughout the Bible history, God has used one way consistently to get his people, to wake up his people, to arouse them, to bring them out of apostasy and get them back to following him. And that was a famine, or if you will, an economic crisis. Whether it was, back in Elijah's time, in Elisha's time, Haggai's time, that God consistently used a famine. And I don't think that it's his method has changed today in the 21st century. Is he's going to use a famine or an economic crisis, or he is using this economic crisis once again to wake up his people. And as I studied the other, other minor prophets and other prophecies, it began to be very clear to me that that's what God is doing today. He's using this economic crisis in part to arouse his people, to help them break free from the materialism that's really holding us back, and allow his church to really become what he intended them to be.
This brings kind of a philosophical attitude, doesn't it, to everything? Because a lot of the discussions that go on in politics, at least in the States, has to do with how do we spend money, or how do we save money, or how do we conserve, or that sort of thing. That's spilling over into a spiritual crisis too, right?
Yeah, because I think we all worry about the same things ourselves, right? How do we save money for our families and send our kids to school and save for a retirement? Not that any of those things are necessarily bad, right? We do have to take care of our families. But, you know, I think in today's society, we've taken our desire for material wealth too far. And it's not, we've gone beyond what we really need to try and gather up all the things that, you know, our hearts desire. And unfortunately, we've traded off our gospel commission for worldly gain.
If you've just tuned in, I'm talking with Tim Acha. He's written a book called End Game Economics. He's suggesting that, in fact, the Bible has predicted or prophesied just the type of situation that most of us personally, and in fact, our governments and our world governments are facing today. Tim, there seems to be always a tension between my personal concern for my needs, my family's in the future, and the call by Christ to be concerned about others and providing for those poor or those who are not as economically blessed as we may be in another way. So how do I balance and that I don't become so personally inward focused, but keep a balance to the commission that Christ asks us to do, to be concerned for others?
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing because we've built an economic system that almost necessitates us to really follow the crowd, to do the same things. Like if you think about the houses that we grew up in, that maybe our parents grew up in, you know, they were half the size, a quarter the size of the houses that we live in today,
mm-hmm.
right? But you can't even find those kinds of houses today, can you? Like, you know, and I think we grew up happy in these smaller homes, but today, you know, we have to have these much larger homes,
right?
And the cost that comes with. You know, that's just one example of how we're entrenched in this system that really forces us to become just like the world and spend money beyond really what we're needing. What we really need to maintain our life, right? And because of that, it leaves us with very little to use to spread the gospel and to share with others and so on. But I also want to say that I don't think it's just a matter of money. I think it's a matter of our personal focus on what we spend our time on, right? Even if we don't have enough, very much money to give, everybody has the same amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we spend our time on? And unfortunately, I think even Christians today, we're spending our time on pleasure seeking and just, you know, going after the same things that the rest of the world is going after, right? And again, in and of itself, you know, having a little fun here and there is not necessarily a bad thing, and I'm not saying that we can't have fun. But I think that we have an incessant desire to keep ourselves preoccupied. You know, we're plugged in with every kind of electronic gadget. We've got, you know, entertainment 24/7. Everything we do, it seems to be to help us fund the next excitement,
mm-hmm.
that we need for, you know, to keep ourselves preoccupied, and we've lost the desire for spiritual things and for helping other people, you know, and that's the other side of this economic system that the social economic system that we've created for ourselves, is that it really takes our focus away from heavenly things.
You have found this direction from the Old Testament prophets such as Habakkuk and Haggai. The book of Amos talks about people who have summer and winter homes and sleep on beds of ivory and all of these concerns. And yet at times Israel of old listened to their prophets and they were blessed for a period of time.
And you know, I believe, I'm an optimist, right? Even though I see so many terrible things, I still am very optimistic that God is going to accomplish a purpose for what he establishes church. I take comfort in the book of Joel. You know, in the second book of second chapter of Joel, he talks about this great outpouring of the Holy Spirit, like he's going to pour out his Spirit on all flesh. You know, and we see that as this latter rain movement that's going to energize the church to finish God's work. And I look at texts like that and I say God is going to accomplish what he needs. But if you think about what's in that was in Joel 2, but if you think about what's in Joel 1, you know, Joel 1 talks about this great famine where the locusts come and devour everything, and you know, the priests are wailing because of the lack of supplies for the maintenance of their church and so on. And so again, there's another precedent there where, or another prophet.
The book is Endgame Economics, Understanding the Financial Crisis Through Scripture by Tim Aka. Tim, where can people get a copy of this book?
The quickest way to get the book is through Amazon.com. Just go to Amazon and look up Endgame Economics. I do have a website. It's www.endgameeconomics.com. You can go there. And you can get an autographed copy of the book. Also, anybody on Twitter, you can follow me on Twitter at EndgameEcon. So that's just at E-N-D-G-A-M-E-E-C-O-N, EndgameEcon. So follow me on Twitter.
Thank you, Tim, for being on LifeQuest today.
Thanks very much, Dwight. Pleasure.
I'll be back in just a moment.
Joining us today on LifeQuest, here is host Dwight Lanoff.
Let me tell you about some future interviews here on LifeQuest. I'm sure you will enjoy them. The first one is Worry-Free Living. Find relief from anxiety and stress for you and your family. You know, worry and its fraternal twins, anxiety and stress, they really affect our mind, body, and spirit. And frankly, they can make families miserable. And what authors Cole and Rose do in some very practical pages is help parents identify what's bugging their families to clarify and sort these worries into something they can and cannot do something about. It's a really insightful resource. It includes Bible-based wisdom, advice, treatment options from a variety of psychological and medical professionals. It will help you identify the top 10 worry and stress points. It will help you plot steps towards change. And you can understand the difference between the mind, I mean what we think, and the brain, the physical process, and the chemical reactions, and how both contribute to worry. I think this book, Worry-Free Living, will help all of us discover tools to de-stress our thinking and calm down our bodies and reject the myth that we are in control and learn to take Jesus at his word when he said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Again, Dr. Arnie Cole and Michael Ross's book, Worry-Free Living, Finding Relief from Anxiety and Stress for You and Your Family. Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, our next book that we will be looking at some point in the future, it's called Proof, Finding Freedom Through Intoxicating Joy of Irresistible Grace. It's by Daniel Montgomery and Timothy Paul Jones. And they're suggesting that the gospel of Jesus Christ can actually open our eyes to the freeing power of authentic grace, grace that releases us from trying to earn God's favor, and grace that liberates from the tyranny of trying to please others, and grace that empowers us to pursue authentic holiness. In fact, they give this illustration that like a strong drink, this grace is intoxicating and dangerous because it leaves us staggering and yet lets us stand, because God's grace not only declares us not guilty in his presence, but it actually will change our relationship with God forever. Now, they call it proof. Why? Well, proof stands for God's planned grace, his resurrecting grace, his outrageous grace, his overcoming grace, and his forever grace. And I think this book will help us understand more about how God's grace and its work can help us understand the attacks of legalism and, of course, the cheapening of grace that sometimes leads God's people to lose sight of the freedom and joy of the gospel. Again, it's by Daniel Montgomery, Timothy Paul Jones. It's called Since Before Time Began, Proof. The third book I want to tell you about that you can look forward to here on LifeQuest is called Never Fight Again, Guaranteed, Groundbreaking Practices for a Win-Win Marriage. David Hawkins, wow, he writes here, if you could change one thing and never again fight with your spouse, would you? In fact, he says, well, you know, Google why couples fight, and you're going to find the top responses are money, parenting, sex, and family. But according to Dr. Hawkins, the truth is that couples can fight about anything. And what he has discovered is that the act of fighting is actually about tunnel vision, about getting what only one person wants, rather than fighting, driving a wedge into a relationship. Dr. Hawkins helps readers discover mutually affirming goals together. Wow. Well, that's something that all of us can find of help and interest. Never Fight Again, Guaranteed, Groundbreaking Practices for a Win-Win Marriage by Dr. David Hawkins. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. Thank you.